latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand. You said you love me, and that's a fact. And then you left me, said you felt trapped.
We're back at the races. 25 minutes into hour two, Thursday. The day after a near holiday in suburban Philadelphia and in South Jersey. Tony Black's birthday yesterday. The only thing bigger was Smarty Jones returning to Parks on Saturday.
That, you got it there, Steve.
Sunday.
Absolutely, that, you're absolutely right, Steve. Smarty Jones Day was a tremendous success. We need to see more of those kind of days in horse racing. And I'm sure if it was Smarty Jones and Tony Black birthday day, might even been bigger. But when I got a call from the young, beautiful lady that coordinates all your phone calls, she did a beautiful rendition of Happy Birthday to me. What a voice.
I love it, Deja. Nice job.
Isn't she talented?
I love it. Good job, Deja.
So Deja did a great job. I've been listening to you this morning because I went out to the track, got on four or five horses, and I'm thinking to myself, 68 years old. This is the first day I'm 68 years old and getting on, you know, a few horses. And I told her, I said, I didn't even break a sweat. So 68 ain't doing nothing negative to my physical makeup. I'm out there and enjoying it. And how about our little horse, Collegeville Girl, gave me an early birthday present the other day when she won after, you know, after having all the trials and tribulations, health problems she's had. And she ran in a four-horse field the other day. Linda Rice sent down a 7-5 shot from New York. And she, my little girl, Collegeville girl, who I've gotten on since she was a two-year-old, put a tremendous effort in and won. So I was real proud of her. That was my early birthday present.
Well, and you know, it's funny, Linda. It's funny you mention it because Linda Rice happened to have. I saw that she put out a tweet, and she's. I don't see a lot of tweets from Linda, but she said that she had a starter. She had two runners at Philly, and it sort of caught my eye. And so it's funny. And then the field ended up, as you mentioned, ended up being short. So it wasn't necessarily a betting opportunity, but it did catch my eye. So I was delighted that the Philly came back and got back in the win column after a very difficult, really a 12 plus months that have been kind of lost to her.
Yeah, she's had numerous health issues and sick and pneumonia and you name it, she had it. But it just shows you how fragile these individuals are sometimes. And then when everything's going right with them and there's no problems that they're dealing with, either health or physical health you think they're indestructible, and then they show you just at times how fragile they are. And you can't take that aspect of the game for granted. It's just the reality of the game. And that's why these horses get tremendous care, and veterinary medical care. There's grooms that never, get acknowledged very much over there that know their horses, They know how they're standing in the stall. They know what their temperament is. And they take tremendous care of these horses. And, it's very important. The guy that knows the horse that deals with him every day, it's very important because he can tell a trainer, listen, this horse, she didn't act right at feed time. She always comes charging at the weapons, and she stood there in the corner with her head down. That's what the value of the people that take care of these horses is. They're the unsung heroes, the grooms. And I have tremendous amount of respect for them because on occasion, they are so important. They not on occasion, on an everyday basis, they are so important. But the other thing, I'm listening to the show earlier, and I was so glad to hear about sports betting and everything, and how Mammoth Park has incorporated sports betting with horse racing. And the last time I looked, horse racing is a sport, so it is so nice to see racetracks incorporating sports betting with their racetrack facility. And it's not separated as two separate entities. And sports betting, people that bet on football and baseball and all the other sports, a lot of them like the gambling aspect of every sport. And if it's there for them to witness horse racing while they're betting the football and whatever, you don't know. Maybe it'll generate something when it comes to fan base and people seeing just how beautiful the sport of horse racing is, and they realize, it's not a show. It's a sport. It's a sport with a tremendous show, just like football. It's a sport, but it has a tremendous show. And every other athletic event that is a sport has a tremendous show where the spectator can not only feel like a spectator, he can almost feel like a participant at times. Because when you see these people at the sports betting facilities and they're rooting for their man or their team or whatever, it's amazing to hear just how vocal they can become. They're just as vocal in every other sport at times as they were when I used to watch people on the way back. I'd ride a horse and I'd see, there'd be 10,000-12,000 people and they'd be up along the fence and you're walking back. And sometimes you'd see how vocal they can be. And sometimes they were so vocal, you had to turn your ears off because anytime people bet money, when they're not winning, it does create sometimes a negative atmosphere. And who better to take out your frustration on than the jockey, But it's great to see these people and how excited they get in every sport, but in horse racing especially.
Well, and that if you haven't seen the video clips from Monday, I said Saturday, it was on Monday, of course, at Parks. They had Pennsylvania Derby preview day, essentially, with the Smarty Jones, that it's actually a little kind of tight proximity, obviously, to, you know, to then, you know, 3 weeks, come back and in 3 weeks and run on the 21st. But they paraded Smarty, and
yeah.
I was surprised they, you know, they tacked him up. And I thought, you know, you put the tack on retired horses, you're they're getting flashbacks. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and sadly, there was somebody, and was it with anticipation? I was
surprised to see Mrs. Chapman.
Oh, she was thrilled. She was thrilled to.
She is such a just a matriarch of racing. You know, she's a great.
She's wonderful. She's tremendous.
A wonderful lady to be around, and she so appreciates all the recognition and all the success she's had in the game. But she certainly appreciates the love and the followers that Smarty Jones has. She really, really loves that, you know, not just for herself, more than so for herself, but for the horse and for the game. You know, she's such a great promoter of the game, and her husband was too. You know, they love the game. Rode a lot of horses for him in the past, won races. Rode Smarty's mother, I'll Get Along. I rode her. Oh, what a nasty witch she was at times. But
I've heard that.
She used to kick a little hat. Guy named Hat rubbed her. And she didn't care what side he was standing on. You know, he always said, "Oh, stand on the left side, you won't get kicked." But you got kicked on the left side, Hat. And it didn't matter if you were on the left or right side. When she saw you, she humped up and she was in one of those moods, she fired at you and she caught him a few times. And I used to say, "Boy, she'll teach you how to be a better groom, Hat. You know, you do a good job, but she'll teach you how to be a better groom." But it was so refreshing to see Smarty and how good he looked. He looked like a horse that was running.
Yeah, he did. He looked tremendous. And the crowd was there to greet him. And, you know, I saw Tom Lamera, who of course is working for the THA for Alan Foreman, and is running the THA communications, and he grew up in the South Jersey Philly region, and really grew up going to Keystone and Philly Park, and you know, he said it was such a great atmosphere there, and of course the match races were also being conducted. There's one more series of match races that'll be at Monmouth to close out the season and crown the match series winners for the year. They set a big number on handle. I mean, compared to last year, the match series really contributed, and they ended up doing over $4 million. And Tom, Tom made a point. He said, when you see a day like that, that, you know, wasn't Pennsylvania Derby / Cotillion Day, when you see the people come out like that on a Labor Day, you know, there's a real affection for the game in the region. And, you know, there's some things that have held back, specifically parks. And you and I have talked about it, Tony. You know, there's a terrible takeout structure. There's no reason for down at parks. There's no reason for the takeout structure to be the way it is there. You know, where there's, you know, lucrative purses, you could drop those takeouts and induce people to play on a regular basis. There's, you know, the fields are very respectable and you know, the product could be so much more attractive to horse players if Greenwood would really take an interest. And you see people come out, and there'll be a big crowd there in 2 weeks we'll be down for Derby Cotillion. And, you know, I think the fifth year in a row we've done it. It's going to be a tremendous race. And for those that are tracking horses, Mr. Money, I sent out a tweet today, Kevin Kirstein at Churchill. He had early morning video of Mr. Money firing a 58 and change 5 furlongs, and he did it with Gabe Saez standing up in the irons. I mean, he did it completely on his own without any ask. I mean, he looks terrific coming in for Brett Calhoun, and, you know, War of Will is on all cylinders here in, at, you know, he's moving from Saratoga down to Belmont. We talked to Mark Cassie the other morning. So we've got a very nice Pennsylvania Derby. The Cotillion, we'll see how that field shapes up, but the Pennsylvania Derby is shaping up to be terrific.
It could be one of the best Pennsylvania Derbies we had in several years. And speaking of the Pennsylvania Derby, my son made me a birthday card, and he left it for me to see in the morning again when I was leaving. And that's what he used as his images on the birthday card. Devil's Honor winning the Pennsylvania Derby and formal gold finishing second. And he didn't trace it, but he did a freestyle pictures, and they were pretty good. And then to put a damper on the whole thing, he says, "That was 23 years ago. You were 45 and you're 68. And I thought, man, you drew a beautiful picture. Why do you got to put 23 years, 45, and 68 in there?
About how long? Well, listen, the fact that you were that old when you won it is notable.
Yeah. But he's something when he did that, and he used the picture, because I have a picture of hanging on my wall in the dining room. Of course, you know, I got a picture of Devil's Honor hanging on the wall. Got a picture in the dining room of my 4,500th winner, my 5,000th winner, my 5,200 winner. And every once in a while, Kylie comes and takes him down and says, "You're not a jockey no more. Stop living in the past." And I'm not living in the past. I just enjoy what has happened in my career. But that's what I have to deal with.
I love it. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Were you there? I mean, did you see the feature on Monday?
No.
Oh my God!
No. I didn't see. I was watching TVG. I didn't go to the track. I had to stay in.
So you saw the race. I mean, the race was spectacular.
Yeah, spectacular race, and you know, when you were mentioning the match series, it was so good to see them revive that. You know, it's a great series, the match series. And, it shows when you see a day like Smarty Jones Day, people do embrace horse racing. People, you know, understand that it's a beautiful sport, but it's a gambling event, and they enjoy it. And there's problems over there that are identified, you know, small problems that could be tweaked, like the takeout and different things. Even when they put the sports betting facility in place, and they put it over in the casino across the parking lot, and I'm thinking to myself, last time I looked, horse racing was a sport. Why don't you have a sports betting facility at parks in the racetrack? You know, you got plenty of room there.
They want people in the casino. They want people in the casino.
Yeah, they'll do anything for the casino, and they figure if they don't do anything for racing, they won't do anything against it, but let's not do nothing for it, and maybe it'll go away. that's the impression they leave me with, and maybe it's totally wrong, I don't know. But that's my impression, you know, do as little as possible. But how can you not get excited about horse racing when you see a day like Smarty Jones Day, and you see the people flocking just to come and see one of our beautiful superstars? And then it brought to my attention on Hall of Fame, you know, when I was at the induction for My Juliet. You know, I'm thinking to myself, when they said this is the first horse, My Juliet, to be inducted in the Hall of Fame that was stabled at Ben Salem. You know, that meant Keystone from the time 77, 76, it was Keystone. And I'm thinking, geez, you know what? There's been some really good horses that raced here and that were stable here. Maybe there'll be others. But it's almost like at times, you know, and that was 76, 77. And, of course, thanks to you and Steve Haskin, you know, that it was brought to the attention. But there's been other horses. I mean, I wrote some Eclipse Award winners like Candy Eclair. She was co-Eclipse Award winning two-year-old, you know. So horses like that, but they're overlooked because at times it's almost like a stigma that follows this race. And I understood that as a rider because, you know, I was a third-rate rider, bread-and-butter rider, stayed in one place. So I was considered third-rate. And that's all right because I knew what I could do when I crossed the reins and put a leg on each side. But it's unfair to some of the horses that are overlooked because there have been some good horses stabled here, you know, that. That was the first one, though, My Juliet, that was stabled here to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, we had Eclipse Award winners like Gallant Bob and horses like that. You know, that it's it is refreshing to see the place get some positive feedback from the crowd and some recognition from the Hall of Fame Museum. Just did get some recognition.
Well, it's going to certainly get plenty of attention in a couple of weeks. We'll be building up maximum security. There's a chance now that Improbable is coming. Baffert telling Jay Privman, War of Will, Mr. Money, spinoff for Pletcher, Tax looks like he's headed there. And, of course, Spun to Run is going to come back, I imagine, out of, you know, out of the performance in the Smarty Jones. And it's funny because Guerrero was so high on the horse going into the Haskell, and he really lauded him, you know, and I that performance on Monday where it looked like Gray Magician was going right on by, and he dug in, and you know, the inside, Tony, we've talked about this a million times, the inside never the place to be at Parks, and yet from the two path, basically, he dug in and got his head back in front of Gray Magician and would not let him by. That, if people haven't seen it, I told everybody on Monday or Tuesday.
Game effort.
Yeah, that was terrific. Effort. Really good.
And, you know, and you're right. The inside has been a death traveler in just about every day there. But, you know, someone called me today, and it was Roy Smith. He's the track superintendent
at Indiana.
Racetrack and Casino, Indiana Grand Racetrack and Casino. And it brought back, I said, man, Roy, you never forget my birthday. And I was just getting off my last
horse. Oh, that's nice.
And he said, yeah, I had to tell you happy birthday. I said, you know, one day you told me something, and I always think about you whenever I think about Devil's Honor. He said, what's that? I said, one day you told me, he said, Black, the inside will be golden today. It was Pennsylvania Derby Day. And he says, I've graded the rail out. And so, of course, I stayed out off of the fence most of the race. Formal Gold came to me around the turn coming to that stretch. I parked him out there, and Mike Smith thought he was going to go right by me. He even told the story like I'm telling it, Mike Smith. And he says, and then I dropped back in after I kind of like, you know, you kind of do it legally where you can hedge him out and then drop back in. I landed on the fence, and he took off running, and Formal Gold never got by me. And Mike Smith was telling the kids in the jocks room that one day when he came last year. About the race, he says, Black did to me what I'm used to doing. I don't, you know, he says, that's what I'm used to doing, what he did to me. But I thought that when I was telling this story to Roy Smith just this morning, I said, but you know what, you probably made a difference, maybe a little difference that day. You told me the rail, you graded it out, the rail's golden. I never forgot that, Roy. That was as important as you telling me happy birthday on any given birthday, because it helped me win a Pennsylvania Derby.
I love it. Well, Tony, it's with another, you know, another week to track these horses, and then we'll be down there. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you and Steve, and we're going to have a nice afternoon, Pennsylvania Derby Cotillion Day. And you don't even have to bring no money. I'm taking care of everything, Steve, for you and Steve. So we'll make sure everything's in order. Okay.
Looking forward to it, Tony, and happy, healthy, many more. 68 years old, and you wouldn't know it. You look at him, it's like time has stood still somehow. You made the clock stop.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your radio. And my mom, when I went to her retirement party a month ago, she's 94. She asked me, when are you going to retire? I said, she's 94, Mom. I'm 68. You set the bar pretty high. And she just retired a month ago.
Unbelievable. Amazing.
I ain't going to make it to 94, but I couldn't believe it when she said, well, when are you going to stop betting on these horses? I said, you set the bar real high, Mom. Always a pleasure, Steve. I'll be listening and we'll keep up the good work. Racing needs you.
Tony, I appreciate it. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a break. About 15 to the top of the hour. Get Steve Haskin in here. We'll get Steve's Woodward thoughts. And also, you start to, it's that time. Got to start looking at two-year-olds. And why not start with the weekend after the hopeful and the futurity? Steve Haskin next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest.
We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a grade one race but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes to the top of the hour, just off with Tony Black, and hard not to bring up the Smarty Jones Day at Philly with Steve Haskin as well, because Steve had a great affection and continues to, and writes about Smarty whenever the occasion arises, and this was as good an opportunity as any. Steve, how great were those images with Pat Chapman out there, you know, parading him, and the nice crowd around the paddock and applauding him. Really kind of nice.
It felt like Pennsylvania Derby Day. I mean, it was so crowded. And, you know, at first it looked like the weather comes in and we got a big rainstorm, and I kept saying, well, let's get this storm over, because I was speaking to John Service before, and he said if it rained, they were going to move it up earlier. So I just said, well, hope the rain either holds off or just comes now, because we still had like, a race and a half to go. And then the rains came and poured for a while, and then it stopped, and then, you know, you could see blue sky, you know, clearing up. So that was great, very appropriate. And, you know, all the crowd that had gone back inside, you know, all came pouring out again. But when Smarty came, I can't believe how good he looked.
Looked unbelievable.
I mean, he looked like he was ready to race. You know, and seeing Pat, it was great, and we hugged and kissed and everything, and it was great, and even got an invitation to come down and stay with him in Florida in Boca Grande. she insisted that we go down there. But it was great seeing her. It was great talking to John Service. Patty Hogan was there. It was great talking to her. And then they did something that was really, I've never seen anything like it. You know, after Smarty came out, you know, and everybody just went nuts. And the one thing about Smarty is that they brought him into the walking ring, and Pat, you know, she was exhausted. I mean, she walked him from the barn all the way, you know, on that racetrack, and she was wearing the wrong kind of shoes, and her feet were killing her. So she came, you know, she was walking, and the horse had two handlers, and they were walking around, and, you know, everybody's applauding and taking pictures, and Smarty went into this, all of a sudden he's on his toes, his ears go up, and he's on his toes, and he's prancing along. I said, he's ready to race. I mean, you know, he's back. The last time I saw Smarty at Parks was his farewell. So, you know, it was, it's hard to believe it was 15 years ago. But he was on his toes, and he just looked from, his ears were up. He was so alert. I mean, I got some really good pictures, which I put on Facebook. And it was great. And then after he left, they had like a trophy presentation with John Service and his wife, Sherry, and Pat, and Patty Hogan. And then they brought out a cardboard cutout of Bill Foster, who practically lived with Smarty Jones. I mean, he was the one who went everywhere with him, who was with him, you know, practically 24 hours a day. And anybody who looks at photos of Smarty or video of Smarty, you'll see a guy who's like, you know, 6'6" or something, big, tall guy with white hair, and he was everywhere. I mean, he just devoted his whole life to Smarty. And he made a cardboard full life-size cutout of Bill Foster. And earlier that day, he died a couple of years ago. And the morning a Monday morning, they took his ashes and they spread it over the racetrack at Parks. And I thought that was kind of neat. Nice. And nice. That was great. It just added, you know, to the emotional aspect of it. It was just a great, great day. But boy, did Smarty look good. I mean, it was incredible. He didn't look like no 18-year-old stallion, I'll tell you that. I mean, yep. He looked like a horse who just went to stud last year. You know, no baby fat. Yeah, I shouldn't say baby fat, but, you know, no belly, no sway back, no nothing. I mean, he looked like a racehorse. And he was bright, alert. I mean, it's incredible. And considering where he's been, Three Chimneys Farm, then to Pennsylvania, and then from Pennsylvania, shuttling to Uruguay for 3 years. He shuttled back and forth to Uruguay. In Calumet Farm, and he was back to Uruguay again, and back to Pennsylvania. You know, and the thing is, you know, he never got the mares. Three Chimneys really never gave him the mares that he was supposed to get, and he just never got a shot. I mean, his best horses were horses that have raced in Japan and South America, and, you know, other countries around the world. He never really. So I was talking to Pat. I know Michael Blowman would absolutely love to have him. I know he's still covering mares. He's still a stallion. But, you know, listen, you know, Silver Charm's been at Old Friends for a long time. And, you know, I know Michael's looking for a new major attraction because, like, everybody has already seen Silver Charm. I mean, everybody comes to see him. I don't think there's anybody left who hasn't been to Old Friends to see Silver Charm or Touch Gold or War Emblem or all those horses have been there a long time. And I know he's looking for a new major attraction. So, you know, I put a big plug in, you know, with Pat. You know, and she's certainly listening to it, and it's certainly a possibility. But I tell you, if Smarty Jones went to Old Friends, you want to see a flock of visitors come. You wait and see what happens after he gets there.
No, I would think that he'd be an ideal candidate. But at the same time, he still's got plenty to, you know, plenty to do, I think. And he's still getting useful runners. And, you know, you see his name, you know, now it's far enough down the road that, you know, he's getting he's got presence as a broodmare sire. He's been productive. We had Lloyd Dobler, who had every reason to be a good horse, and everything kind of went wrong for him. I mean, starting when he was a yearling and he colicked before the sale. That's the only reason we even got him. And then he wrenched something in his back end that winter at Aqueduct, and he just never really was the same after that. But he was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, he got all the best physical attributes of Smarty. I mean, he chestnut and just, you know, striking. He had plenty of nice white markings on him, including that big blaze. And I mean, I adored him. He continues to be my favorite of the horses that we've campaigned.
Well, Smarty certainly was striking. Even though he didn't, you know, he had two white, you know, angles in the back, you know, and just a small star. But when you look at him, and you know what's Smarty in the minute you look at him. I mean, he's so distinctive looking. He's just got that look about him. He's got that flowing mane. Just a very, very distinctive horse. He was the broodmare sire of a horse on a Derby trail this year. I can't remember who it was, but I remember it was a horse. I remember his, both of his grandsires were Derby and Preakness winners. The sire was by, it was the son of Sunday Silence, and the dam was by Smarty Jones. And there was a horse I was rooting for on the Derby trail this year. I all these horses meshed together. I can't remember who it was, but it was a pretty prominent horse on the Derby trail. So, you know, his name is out there. I tell you, and, you know, you start looking at horses that you start thinking, well, maybe they're disappointing as sires, and all of a sudden their name starts popping up. What about Touch Gold? Touch Gold as a grandsire and as a great grandsire. You don't see him. You don't see any sons or anything. But mares on the female family, Touch Gold now is popping up everywhere.
Yeah, we talked about it with earlier in the spring. We talked about it with John Parada when we had that deputy minister Touch Gold conversation, and he was prevalent, or at least you know, was prominent, was showing up as we were getting closer to the Triple Crown season.
Yeah, no, no, it was a great day. Like I said, to see that many people come out, and the love people still had for Smarty Jones, you know, it was a great scene. It was, you know, seeing a lot of friends out there and seeing a lot of horsemen out there and talking to them, and it was just a very festive day. Like he said, you look at the crowd and you could swear it was Pennsylvania Derby Day. I mean, the place was packed.
Well, it'll be packed again in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from Saturday. And then, yep, of course, the important follow-up question, how was Non Solo Pasta afterward?
Steve, I did not go.
Oh!
Did not go. Had to get Countdown to the Cup. I was late, you know, because we came back that day. I drove all the way from Connecticut. You know, we stopped off at home to drop off some food quickly, and then just got right back in the car. I was exhausted driving back. It was raining, and so we got right back in the car to go to Parks. And, you know, by the time this ended, we were going to leave, you know, right after that. But we, you know, we ran into people. We were talking. You know, the next thing you know, they ran to Smarty Jones, and you know, it was getting late. And I said, I hadn't even started Countdown to the Cup. So I said, I just don't, you know, I, you know, just to try and find Non Solo Pasta from there. I guess you'd have to take Route 1 or something. I don't know, but I said, I just had to get home. I was totally exhausted. But
all right. All right.
We'll definitely go. We might go back, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll go Pennsylvania Derby or so. We'll see.
There you go. Well, it's only 15 minutes away, actually, from it's an easy.
Yeah, what do you do? You get on Route 1 all the way, right? I guess.
Yes, and then there's like a little clover leaf to cut over. It's easy.
Yeah, and you go on. Yeah, you get off Route 1. Yeah, what is it? Like Trenton Avenue, I think. West Trenton Avenue, something like that.
I forget the name of the road, but it's an easy jaunt from. You could have just followed John Service because he goes almost every night. He's there a couple of nights a week. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. That's Service's favorite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, we definitely will get there.
All right. Well, we're Johnny and Gail and Tina and I. It's become a great tradition. So we're looking forward to a couple of weeks. We'll be down in Philly. You talk about countdown to the cup. Let's dive in, Steve, to some of the results. And I'll ask you the same thing I asked Dick Powell, preservationist. How does he fit into this, you know, into this classic picture? How much of a threat is he?
Well, let's put it this way. You know, I've been saying for the last 2 weeks that the Whitney was a total throwout because he got an absolutely atrocious ride. I said, you go back to the Suburban Handicap. I mean, where he runs 159-4 and absolutely destroys Catholic Boy. I said, that's the real preservationist. I said, that other race was a total throwout. So, you know, for Countdown to the Cup this week, I concentrated on the 2-year-olds. I ranked the top 25 2-year-olds and wrote something about each one. So I put off the classic rankings, but if I until next week. But when I do the rankings next week, and if I had done them this week, I'm having preservationist as number one on there. I'm going to put him up over McKenzie. I mean, he's proven it a mile and a quarter. And like I said, his race in the Suburban is the best mile and a quarter race by far I've seen this year. By far. I mean, to beat a horse like Catholic Boy the way he did, you know, he just wants to sit behind horses. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to rush, you know, go wide on the first turn and then rush to the lead like he did in the Whitney. The Whitney was just one of those races. And, you know, a lot of horses just don't perform as well as at Saratoga, you know. I just think he's if he comes back in the Gold Cup, you'll see a better horse. But he obviously did well at Saratoga. In the I don't even think the Woodward was best race. But I was watching the race and I'm saying this horse is getting then nothing against the ride. I said, but this horse is getting a rotten trip again. I mean, he's stuck. He's got horses all around him. He's got horses in front of him. He's got horses outside of him. He's got horses inside of him. Like I said, horses got nowhere to go. You know, and then a little hole opened up, and he managed to fight his way through. And, you know, I mean, he came home in 12-1 for the last. You can't ask a horse to come home faster than 12-1. You know, Bell Harbor is in good form. He's obviously a much better horse than Bell Harbor, you know, who's coming from Monmouth. I thought Yoshida ran a good race. He just gets started too late. You know, he needs to get into the race earlier. But, you know, obviously the race lost a little luster when Vino Rosso scratched. So it might have been a different story if he was in there. But I thought Preservationist came back, ran just the way he was supposed to run. He was running third, got a good stiff race in him. And I think when he gets back to Belmont Park, you know, I'm listening to Jimmy Jerkins. I'm sure he's not going to go straight from the Woodward. If he even goes to the Breeders' Cup, you know, all you got to do is look back at, some horses in the past. You know, Alan Jerkins was not a big fan of going out to California for the Breeders' Cup, and I don't think Jimmy is either. But I'm sure Centennial will be. So I'm sure he will go for the Breeders' Cup, but they're not going to pass up. I doubt they're going to pass up the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And you see, when he gets back to Belmont at a mile and a quarter, I think you'll see the real preservationist. But, you know, listen, he's won his last. You win the Woodward, you win the Suburban. We're talking, you know, two of the historic, prestigious races, and he's just getting better right now. like I said, he loves the mount a quarter. And there's certainly nobody out in California to be afraid of. There's nobody anywhere around the country. There's no, what older horses are you going to be afraid of? I mean, you got McKenzie is the big horse. And there is a slight question whether, you know, mount a quarter is his best distance. You look at the races, he's run at seven furlongs. He's run super at seven furlongs. He's run super at a mile. And he ran super at a mile and an eighth. But, you know, when he's got a mile and a quarter, he couldn't get by Gift Box in a slow-run San Diego handicap. Can he win? Of course. Of course he can get a mile and a quarter. But is it his best distance? It's a question mark. So, I don't think anybody's going to be afraid of McKenzie at a mile and a quarter. So right now, I think Preservationist, he's got the best credentials right now. He's got the best mile and a quarter race.
That's fair. I mean, it's absolutely fair to say. And you look at the 3 year olds, and obviously they've got, another set of opportunities, including Jockey Club Gold Cup, the ACAC. If we're watching what Omaha Beach is doing, and the Awesome Again. Out west, so you got a round of preps yet. The only 3 year olds that I can think of that have run triple digit figs at the distance would be Maximum Security, Code of Honor, Mucho Gusto. That
Don't
might
be surprised it. If none of them run in the classic.
That's true, because the Code of Honor, it was pretty obvious from you listening to both Mr. Farish and Shook.
I'll give you one word: mindshaft.
Well,
I mean, when he didn't go in the classic, everybody was in a state of shock. I mean, he was like the best. He was by far and away the best horse in the country, especially the way he won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And then they just said, "Oh, he's not going." I think Farish and William Farish and Shook McGahey are both well aware, three-year-olds, Eastern horses going out to run against the older horses. Listen, Eastern horses have done okay at Santa Anita. Mucho yep. Macho Man went out and won, and Fort Lauderdale went out and won. Those are tough older horses. It's not easy for a three-year-old to go out to California and win a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic. So I'm just wondering if they're looking ahead, for his 4-year-old year. I'm not saying they're going to bypass it. I hope they don't, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. I mean, I don't think either one is a fan of going out to California for it. Maximum Security, let's see what he does in the Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Derby's not going to be any walkover, that's for sure. That's going to be one tough race. And, there's a question mark with him. Look how long it took him to recover from the Haskell. If that was indeed, I don't know what the story was behind it. You don't know what's going on there. He's at Monmouth Park and he's working miles and 150 and stuff. So, I mean, you have no idea what's going on with that horse. But, it's 5 weeks to the Haskell, to the Travers, and you don't send him to Saratoga. You keep him at Monmouth Park to train, which was, I thought a very interesting move in the first place. I don't want to say a warning flag, but you would think that Jason Service has a barn at Saratoga. If you're going to run the Travers, you go over and train him over the racetrack.
Well, that had been their intention, and then when he didn't like a week or 10 days, whatever it was later, it became obvious when he didn't get him there quickly.
That's why I said forget about him.
Yeah, that made it obvious.
Yeah, and then they kept putting it off. I mean, it was like less than a week to the race, and they still hadn't made the decision. And I kept saying, he's not going to run. I'd be shocked if he ran. So the fact that he couldn't recover from the Haskell in 5 weeks, I don't know. I have no idea how he came out of the race. I mean, obviously he's back. I don't even want to say working. He's back doing what he does in the morning. I don't even want to call him works. I don't know. That's the way he trains, and it's obviously worked for him. But, we'll see. He's going to be up against some very tough horses in that race. I mean, Mr. Money, we don't know how good he is. He's been tearing everybody up. Watch out. I thought, one race that's gone completely overlooked was that allowance win by Spinoff against older horses, good older horses. you know, beat Lone Sailor. Just, you know, ran away from Lone Sailor. You know, fast time for a mile and eighth, drew off. That's the real spinoff. That's the horse who I had, you know, like number five on my Derby dozen. He was one of my top Derby contenders. So I think this horse is finding himself right now. I mean, there's going to be some good horses in there. You know, Baffert is shipping in. I guess was improbable. He's improbable as a possibility, and so was Mucho Gusto. But you know, Baffert didn't want to make a decision until late. You know, regardless of what he says now, you know, we'll see next week who he's going to decide to send. Game winner. I don't know what's going on with him. Baffert's been very vague about him. He doesn't sound like he's really anywhere even close to a race.
Well, Jay was with us yesterday. Jay says all he's doing is walking, and it's not promising.
Yeah. Right. So he's not close to anything. So he's obviously had a setback. And as far as Omaha Beach goes, I'm going to ask him a lot. If you're going to go in the ACAC and then in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, boy, that's asking a lot of a horse. You know, it's not like you're giving him a longer prep. I mean, ACAC was just, you know, that's an afterthought. He was supposed to run that Shared Belief.
Yep.
So you can run in the Shared Belief, and then he can even come back in the Awesome Again. But, I mean, if you want to go from the ACAC at Churchill Downs and then ship back to California to run the Classic, as much as I love Omaha Beach, I think that's asking an awful lot. You know, realistically, you just wait until the end of the year or so. Run him in the Malibu, and then point for the big races next year. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens in the ACAC. But the ACAC is not exactly a excellent prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic.
It's strictly the smart thing to do in terms of a one turn, you know, what you love, a one turn tightener, then the stretch out, as opposed to him with this long layoff having to go a mile and an eighth at Santa Anita in that Awesome Again, would have been taxing. And I mean, if you're going to get there, this feels like the right way to have taken a detour.
Well, it's a different type of taxing. I mean, to me, the most taxing race is a one-turn mile where you have to run hard. But it's the kind of race where you're going to get more out of that race than you would going a mile and eighth, I think.
Right.
You know, because the fact that you have to run hard, you're going to go 22 and change, 45, 109, 110. You're going to have to run hard the whole way. Mile and eighth, you're going to go 23 and change, 47, 111, you know, and then you're going to try and come home fast, but you're going to get much more out of a mile race. But it's still asking a lot for a horse that's been out as long as he has. You know, he's been out for a very long time. Normally, you don't see horses with entrapped epiglottis. Is it epiglottis or epiglottises? But you don't see a horse out that long with it. You know, normally they bounce back pretty quickly.
Well, looking at this, pending that Pennsylvania Derby, and let's see where War of Will and Mr. Money, where they fit into the equation. But Code of Honor ran a 105 in the Travers, Tacitus 101, Maximum Security ran a 101 or a couple of different times already. Ran a 101 in the Derby, so that's his mile and a quarter number. Mucho Gusto a 101 in the Travers, so there's his at a mile and a quarter. Although you can just tell that he's really not the mile and the eighth is really his thing. And then for the older horses. The key horse, I mean, after Preservationist and now Higher Power, who jumped in at the quarter pole,
yeah, he
the Pacific
could be any
Classic.
Time, by the way, I mean,
you bet.
I don't think that race was a fluke. I mean,
I think
he's a pretty good horse. I mean,
I agree.
That was a mystery. Very, very solid, sharp mile and a quarter race. He could be. It's an interesting story there.
The mystery horse in all of this equation is Vino Rosso. going yeah. back to that 105 he ran in the Gold Cup and returning to Santa Anita. If Todd is able to get him, you know, back where he had him, Vino Rosso is the will be the interesting sort of shunted down the list horse at Breeders' Cup.
Well, he's not going to certainly not going to be. I'm just waiting for him to come back. I was away. I haven't heard. What was the reason for the scratch?
I never saw a reason actually, and
neither I.
So the reason might have been that Bal Harbour was about to run a big one.
well, that's possible, but I mean, unless he just decided, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I mean, he might say, Bal Harbour is doing so well, let's wait for the Jockey Club Gold Cup with Vino Rosso. He's a mile and a quarter horse.
Although Vino had run so well.
Listen, the thing about Vino Rosso, by the way, is that, yeah, I mean, I go back and say that. I look stupid saying this now, but, you know, In my Derby Dozen last year, I had Vino Rosso number one over Justify. I thought Vino Rosso was, Justify and Vino Rosso grew up together in the same field. They went to this. They were broken together. They went to the sale together. You know, Vino Rosso was the horse that Tanya Gunther, you know, cried over when he got sold at the sale. So that's the horse he was really, really close to. And I was always a big fan of Vino Rosso. I mean, I had him number one for a lot of weeks. You know, all the Justify fans thought I was crazy, and I was. But I knew he was a good horse, and I knew he was a mile and a quarter horse. And it looks like he's coming back to that.
Well,
now the Whitney was kind of a strange race. I'm gonna throw that race out as well. You know, if you remember, Todd was, he was about to take the blinkers off, so.
Well, and apparently Todd, distance was the issue, according to Dave Grenig, that he would rather have him prep at a mile and a quarter in the Gold Cup.
Oh, I agree.
And that if he had run in the Woodward, he would not have run him again. So
right. The
idea is take another 4 weeks and run the mile and a quarter and then run another mile and a quarter. So
yeah,
here's,
I think
so
he'll like Belmont Park a lot better anyway. You know, the fact that he didn't run that well at Saratoga. You know, so, you know, like I said, some horses aren't at their best at Saratoga. You know, send him to Belmont. You know, the big sweeping turns he should appreciate. They'll appreciate the mile and a quarter. The only problem with doing that is that the Jockey Club Gold Cup, by the way, has been an absolutely horrible prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic when it's out in California. It was really, you know, people think, if you think it was a bad prep now, it was a really bad prep when it was a mile and a half. You know, when horses had to drop back from a mile and a half to a mile
sure.
and a quarter.
Well, because you're absolutely taking the speed out of the equation.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, that's where the older horses are. Yeah, I'm looking at preservationist, obviously McKinsey, Vino Rosso, higher power.
And you
got to throw Yoshida in there because he's always closing,
yeah.
And he's going to appreciate the mile and a quarter. So I mean, I think it'd be much better. But you know, in a mile and eighth, he's just getting too late to start. Yeah, and you know. He's there. He's not really flying at the end of the race. He's getting up for seconds and thirds and stuff like that. But he's in contention. He's just not finishing off. I think he needs a mile and a quarter. I think he's a horse because he comes late, and his moves got to be timed right. But he loves a mile and a quarter, and I think you got to put him in the equation.
Thunder Snow was supposed to come for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Yes.
Thunder Snow is another horse. You got to definitely, of course, you got to throw him in the equation. You know, it's just a shame that he got scratched from the Whitney because he was doing so well. You know, he was stable in the attics. You know, right next to Avi and Rhoda's house. I'd see him every morning. Every morning he'd come out at 6:30 on the dot every morning. Go to the main track. I think one morning he went to the Oklahoma, but. You know, just watching him physically when he came out, he was incredible, incredible. You know, I spoke to the head lad there. I said, "How does this horse look so incredible? I mean, he's won or placed in in Group One or Grade One stakes in five different countries. You know, people don't realize he's a Grade One. He's a Group One winner in France. You know, he's placed in classics in England, in Ireland, in the Guineas. Two Dubai World Cups. Three extremely good performances in the United States. Unlucky not to win at least one of them. I mean, for us to run as well as he has in the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Met Mile, you know, he could have easily won both of those races. And I thought he ran super in the Breeders' Cup last year. So, I mean, he's a horse you definitely have to reckon with. So, I mean, you know, it's a good base of older horses. That's why if you've got a three-year-old, you know, again, there's not one horse that you're going to be, there's not an Arrogate. There's no way in the world I want to run against him. It's not a California Chrome. But there are a lot of solid horses that, you know, that want to go a mile and a quarter. But I tell you, I'm still going to put preparationists on top. I have faith in Jimmy Turk, and I guess deep down, I really want to see Jimmy win a Breeders' Cup race or a Classic or anything. You know, you look at Alan. You know, he's regarded by many as the greatest trainer ever, at least in modern times. And he's never won a Classic. He's never won a Breeders' Cup race. he never had the stock. Jimmy has the stock, and you know, he's won two Travers, and now he's got a horse. He's got a Breeders' Cup Classic horse, and I just think maybe it's in the stars. I don't know. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I love Jimmy. You know, I love talking to him. I love him as a trainer. I think he's a tremendous trainer. You know, he had to overcome a major shakeup, and when he was really down, when the owners took, you know, all his top horses away. Ned Evans took all of his horses away, including Quality Road. He lost all his big horses, and Centennial was the one that supported him all these years and stayed with him. And he's doing great for them. You know, he had Wicked Strong, and now he's got this horse. So I would love to see him do well. Plus, I got to tell you another thing, by the way. I think he's got a huge shot of winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile too.
And, well, a quick talk about that.
And he's to me, he's the early Kentucky Derby favorite.
Well, talk about Green Light Go and that situation. I thought it was smart to wait, given the, you know, the upside of this horse.
You know, Jimmy just didn't want to run him in a slop. You know, that's fine. Why when you got the Champagne? You know, if you're running a hopeful, what do you know? Are you going to go from the hopeful and wait all the way to the Breeders' Cup? Are you going to run back in the Champagne again? So, you know, I can see that. You wait. Listen, we've seen what happened in the last few years. You look at a horse like Good Magic. Good Magic runs second in the Champagne in the second start of his life and comes off and wins the Breeders' Cup. You know, these 2-year-olds have been lightly raced. They're not racing that much anymore as much as they used to. So, to me, the Champagne is the race because I always remember that was the definitive 2-year-old race. That was the race that decided 90% of the 2-year-old championships. I know times have changed, obviously, but I'm still a huge fan of the Champagne. If you can win at a flat mile at Belmont Park, you got something there. And I just think that I think the Champagne would be a great spot for him. He's got the pedigree, he's got the looks, he's got the temperament. I thought his race in the Saratoga Special was a very, very strong race. You know, I've got him ranked number one right now for my Breeders' Cup Juvenile / Kentucky Derby rankings.
And then thoughts on the winner, on Basin, certainly I thought ran a nice race, and it also flattered three Technique too, who I'm sure is going to show up in the Champagne, as well as Gouverneur Morris.
I have Three Technique ranked number three, and Gouverneur Morris ranked number five. I mean, I'd say as far as a maiden race goes, Three Techniques race was about, the turn of foot he showed. He just absolutely blew his field away. He just stormed to the lead. He's got this beautiful low action. Love the way he strides out. He ran 4/5 faster. I mean, it was fast time. 1:22.3. And he ran 4/5 faster than the other division, which was won by a really nice horse named Famish. But you look at Three Techniques pedigree. He's got 7 classic winners in his first 5 generations, including 3 Triple Crown winners. All the 3 Triple Crown winners from the 70s he has in his in his pedigree. I was very impressed. I just loved loved the way he did it. And and Governor Morris, well, you know what can you say? I mean, that was a very, very strong race. I know it was only a it's hard to get a gauge on a horse based on 1 5.5 furlong start in the slop, but to me, he looked like the real deal. The way he set off the pace and the way he powered his way to the lead and just drew off. And the thing I loved about it is that Johnny Velasquez never, ever moved his whip. His whip was in the exact same position at the quarter pole as it was in the finish, and then he just won totally geared down. And he's also a horse with the pedigree. And another horse whose second dam is by Touch Gold, and he's inbred to Unbridled. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him on a fast track. I think he's got tremendous potential. But, I mean, you mentioned Basin. How many good two-year-olds does Steve Asmussen have? My goodness. I mean, he's all over the place. And listen, the horse that they really love at the barn, that they really think is very special, is Godzilla. And I think Godzilla, you look at his pedigree, by the way. He's bred for stamina. I don't know what he's doing on the lead. I mean, he's got this natural speed. I don't know where he gets it from. But, his pedigree is all stamina. If they can teach him to come from off the pace, you'll see a much different horse in the future than you did in the Champagne, hopeful. You know, not that he ran poorly. You know, he ran third, but he did get tired. But that's not he'll be much better when he goes two turns and learns how to sit behind horses. But, listen, Basin is coming off, run against Three Technique. And he broke his maiden. He ran 109.3, so he certainly had credentials. So it didn't surprise me that he ran big. I'm surprised he won as huge as he did to run off and beat those horses, by such a large margin. But, he handles fast tracks. He handles sloppy tracks. And the thing I love about all these horses we're talking about, they've all got the pedigree. Not only are they Breeders' Cup Juvenile horses, but they're all Derby horses as well. Recently we've had some really huge performances. John Sheriff sent out that horse Express Train, who looked like a monster. And the thing is, he was coming off a second to 8 rings. How good does that make 8 rings look? Express Train comes back and wins by 14 lengths going a mile. And he's another horse that's pedigree is inundated with stamina. And to me, I don't know if anybody that really could not say that 8 rings would have had no trouble beating that field. I mean, they came home in 40-2 for the last 3/8. They came home 14-2 for the last 8th of a mile, and they went 125-3. With 8 rings coming off that 94 buyer, you would have think he would. I mean, I think the horses that were behind him that won the race, Nucky and some of the others. Some of them are nice horses, but I think 8 rings is probably something special. The fact, on top of what he did and the big numbers he got, but the fact that the horse that he beat in that race, that finished second to him, comes back and wins by 14 lengths. So, I mean, there's some really, really, really good horses.
Well, the summer ended strong, Steve, and both at Saratoga, Del Mar, Ellis, everywhere, and
Ellis Park, by the way, is a horse. Watch out! Watch out, Ellis Park. Dale Roman's got this horse, Dennis's Moment, who broke his maiden at Ellis by 19.25 lengths and 121.4 for 7 furlongs.
We've talked about him. You've talked about him. I mean, he's not news. We talked about him a month ago.
but you just you mentioned Ellis Park, and that's the horse that you got to watch coming out of there.
No doubt, and then there's more too. Just based on what we've already seen, the Ellis Park runners that we saw at Kentucky Downs on Saturday on the turf. Look like they're going to be yeah. major players.
Yeah, no, I mean, Ellis Park is not it's not the old pea patch that everybody remembers. It's turned into a very a very good spawning ground for young horses, and a lot of good horses come out of it. So I think one of the races you have to watch now is going to be the Iroquois. There's going to be some really nice horses in the Iroquois, including Dennis's Moment. Kenny McPeak's got that really well-bred Flute Maker who won by 11 in an off-the-turf race. I think he's going to the Iroquois as well. I know Kenny McPeak's been touting him for quite a while now.
Well, and of course, he won the turf two-year-old race closing weekend as well. The horse with the cute name.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that? The McPeak horse that won the turf race that won the the With Anticipation.
Super.
No, the construction. The it's the army. It's the fighting CB.
Fighting CB.
Yeah, yeah. Fighting CB.
Yeah. And he's been touting him as well. Those were the two horses that he's been touting.
Now the horses that seem to be headed toward a face-off with Dennis's Moment includes that Rowdy Yates, the Asmussen, Eddie Keneally's got Scabbard, and
that's a nice horse too. Thank God they changed his name.
All right, the Noose.
If anybody doesn't know, he's been called Noose, which is like in this day and age, nobody's going to accept a horse called Noose.
Well, that was changed. So it'll shape up. There'll be plenty more that line up, but the Dennis's Moment next step certainly going to be under the microscope. Steve, this was great. Glad you went to Philly on Monday, and I appreciate it.
Steve, I appreciate it as well.
Steve asking everybody, and we'll check in next week as we inch closer and start to really, put your fields together and start to track the way they're going to shape up for the Breeders' Cup. We got a lot of good racing here the next 6 weeks, and good racing today, including at Kentucky Downs. We're going to see if we can't get an opinion or two. I also want to check in with Rich Eng. He'll join us next. Back after this at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you.
Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back 20 minutes to fill out, and let me get a couple of to connect with Rich, but let me get a couple of results in from Monday and so forth, including some of the stakes that we didn't discuss and at Parks. How about Ned Allard? What a great job he continues to do with Abiding Star, 6 years old now. And okay, yeah, the Neshaminy was a little bit of a class relief spot, but Abiding Star by a neck with Carol Cedeno as the favorite over Perrette for Chucky Lawrence and Matt Shearer. But Abiding Star has now, I just want to see what, how much, let me dig back here. Abiding Star has now, that's his 12th win, and he is up to 560,000 plus. Abiding Star, the Uncle Mo gelding, Gil Campbell homebred. So that was among the undercards from the Smarty Jones card. Engage, Steve Asmussen for the Woodford team with Joe Bravo aboard. In close, was basically up close chasing and took over and then held safe. That was in the Ben Salem. You also had Shellone and the Jacksons, Leal, with Arno Delacour. One of several wins for Paco Lopez on the day. Shalone overwhelmed that Roman Rachel, the dialed in mare. And I was going to say she had gotten, yeah, this was a little bit of a class relief for her as well. She had come out of the Honorable Miss, where Minute to Stardom, of course, couldn't be caught. And before that, the Better Roses, where Separation of Powers got her. Before that, she had won the Ski Pat, but she takes the Roman Rachel. And Dynatail, speaking of doing a good job with a veteran horse, Mike Denny for Ballybrit, the Calumet bred Dynatail continues to just, just plug along. I mean, she this is her eighth win in 30 starts. She shortened up last time in that sprint at Monmouth, but then stretches back out here and wins the President's Cup. And she was a price in here with that in this group. And who went off favorite? Colonia went off favorite for Graham. Oh, Graham mentioned that he was a little disappointed.
to say the least. John Service second in here with not a Prada price for our man Will Schwartz and his partner, Mainline. Got beat a neck. Oof. Tough beat. So there you go. And the Catherine Sophia. I want to slip this in, too, because the prep for the three-year-olds toward the cotillion. And Alexis Delgado has had a very good year with Jeltren. And, you know, the test was a little too deep. But she hit the board in the Mother Goose. She hit the board in the Acorn. If you recall, you know, she was a huge, what, $100 horse in the Devona Dale. And she really is. She, you know, when they've tried to shorten her up, she has not been as effective as she has been at a rat of ground. And she wins the Catherine Sophia with authority, you know, won by seven lengths. And I'm curious, let's see what she got in here for a fig out of curiosity. 91 buyer. So she absolutely snaps back, stretching out. And that's that equals her career best, which came in that Devona Dale. She's had a really nice year. It's only her second win, but she's banked three and a quarter, basically. About $325,000, with, you know, this was the first race of the year for her since the Glitter Woman, the restricted Glitter Woman, first week in January. This was the first race that she participated in that wasn't a graded stake. So, Jeltren, and I'm sure they'll come back in the cotillion. And then finally, Pure Sensation, who's just a running fool, the 8-year-old. Unbelievable for the Generazios. I think I mentioned this one, actually, with the other graded stake on the day, the Smarty Jones. But I wanted to give you those other supporting stakes. Good day of racing, and they'll come right back at it in 3 weeks. Rich Ang is standing by, and Rich wrapped up a nice summer with the Del Mar coverage, and we say good morning, Rich Ang.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rich, how'd you end up? How'd the rest of the, since we talked last, how'd the summer go?
I thought the summer went great. You know, Del Mar, the people down there, they really had a laser focus on them after the winter, spring at Santa Anita, but I thought they came through with flying colors. The products that they were able to put together, they were able to maintain full fields, you know, decent quality. It wasn't as good a quality as some other summers, but, you know, the size of the fields was good. The number of races was okay. I thought it was a smart move to run seven races on the weekdays to try to conserve the horse inventory. And then they were able to expand a little bit on the weekends. But overall, I give them really good marks for what they're able to do. And the number one statistic, Steve, that I know us in horse racing, we follow it and love it as a sport and as a business, the zero fatalities during the races in the afternoon, which was just a phenomenal feat considering 36 days of horse racing.
No doubt. We talked a little yesterday with Jay Privman and got Jay's thoughts. How'd you hit him through the late portion of the meet?
Yeah, not too bad. I actually did, you know, better the early part of the meet. I know it was kind of chalky, but, you know, I was grinding out a lot of good days in the first few weeks of the meet as some of the bombs started to pop up, because statistically, at any race meet in America, usually the favorites always gravitate toward that 33%. So in the second half of the meet, there was quite a few more prices. If you're able to catch them, that's great. If you weren't able to catch them, that's not good. I will have a one black mark that I'll make a point of. There was one disqualification at Del Mar that really cost me a lot of money. It was the last race of the day. I can't remember the day of the week, but it was the number 10 horse who won by From Here to There. But they disqualified him for something that occurred a few strides out of the gate.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you visually remember the race, and I know there were people howling on social media about that call, and I know it personally hurt my pocketbook. That would have made it an outstanding meet if they just allowed that horse to stay up.
Now, you know, it's amazing. You know, the people use the moniker "Game of Inches" for so many different, you know, so many different sports and so many different occasions, and it's really the case here. I mean, I heard so many people from over the weekend that needed Juliet Foxtrot, that you know they ended up getting beaten that photo in that crazy finish that you could watch it 100 times and you just can't believe that Pratt gets there with her with Vasilika. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable. So
you know, Steve, you know, that's a great example to bring up, because you know when we watch courses run, sometimes you hear people talk about the herd mentality, where horses won't pass others because they like to run together in packs. And sometimes you'll find a champion horse who just knows where the finish line is and refuses to lose. And that was the situation with Vasilika. It's almost like she knew where the finish line was, and you could see her like stretching her neck out in the last few strides and just put her head down on the wire. It was just a phenomenal performance by her and Le'Veon Pratt. But I think it was an example of a horse who knows how to win, basically how to win horse racing.
Yeah, it's a combination of Pratt and you know the way he rides. I mean, it's not as if he was finishing against a weak rider either. I mean, for him to hang that on Van Dyke, it's pretty astounding. And you know, and there's not, you know, I know there's nothing that a rider can do per se that necessarily coordinates or times the horse so that the nose is literally exactly coming down right when it needs to, as opposed to be coming back up. I mean, some of that is just, you know, you can't, it's random. It's where the wire is, so it gives you that that impression. But the way this thing, you watch the slow mo repeatedly, and I thought he got there live. I mean, when you see it bang bang, but then when they were showing the replay, it was like you realize how tight it was, and then the actual photograph is just insane. But this is, you know, this is what it is. You talk about disqualifications. It was Red Valor, I think, is the horse that that was in question, right? Red Valor.
Yeah, all I remember was the number 10 horse. Ruben Fuentes was the jockey, and
yeah, that was it for Val Brinkerhoff. Yeah,
yeah. The scenario occurred a few strides out of the gate, and I thought there was some acting possibly by one of the other jockeys to kind of, you know, make it look worse than it was, and the stewards bit. But you know, going back to Vasilika and that photo finish, you know, they say these things are supposed to even out between, you know, winning and losing photos,
yes,
and also disqualifications. But I think I stand, you know, with my handicapper horse player friends that we're still waiting to get even on those breaks. They always seem to go against us more often than not.
I think people think that mentally, but I've talked about this so often, whether it's DQs or photos, you just, you know, in the ultimate, when the scales are balanced, whenever that comes, you just hope you were at least even. You don't even want to come out ahead. just let me be even. Rich, a couple of things. We got about 5-6 minutes. I want to, obviously it's a quiet, for you. You'll take a little bit of a break between now and the opening of Santa Anita, after the busy summer. So we'll look for Rich, for Rich's analysis, at racedaylasvegas.com, when Santa Anita resumes. Did you look at any simulcasts? Did you look at the Kentucky Downs at all today?
Well, you know, I did look at the stakes. I didn't handicap the card, but you know, I certainly keep track of all the stakes races, and Kentucky Downs, has a nice card today. The purses are out of this world. But, you know, I saw a horse that just jumped off the page at me in the ninth race at Kentucky Downs is the Old Friend Stakes, $250,000 purse. But when I saw that John Sadler shipped Catapult in for the race.
He didn't.
Oh, he didn't. He did not show up?
No,
oh,
no, okay. They scratched. They came out. They did come out.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I was going to say he certainly jumped off the page compared to the rest of the field as far as a huge class edge. So would have loved him in that spot. I don't know why they didn't go end up going after all. But, I guess I'll just have to say never mind then.
All right, no problem. Well, then turn your attention. I saw that you got the new release at America's Best Racing, your latest piece this month.
Yeah, I wrote about the fact that the three-year-old division's really up in the air, and I put out a hypothetical question, Steve, and, you know, this was not to denigrate any of the three horses and the connections that won the Triple Crown races, but I put an example in there that if somebody walked around a shopping mall and asked people in the crowd, you know, can you name one of the winners of the three Triple Crown races, and I would guarantee most of the people would draw a blank. Because, you know, we have Country House who won the Derby and the War of Will won the Preakness and the Sir Winston won the Belmont. But those horses have all disappeared from the racing map. None of them have won a race since, and two of them haven't started since. So I wrote that they were out of sight, out of mind. So it sure looks like the champion three-year-old is going to be a horse who did not win the Triple Crown race. And the Classic could end up deciding things depending on how many of these three-year-olds actually get the sand in need and face their elders, but they could decide the championship for the 3L division right there within that race.
Well, and you know, in addition to swing around to some of the other topics that you covered over the summer, you also talked 2 weeks ago at ABR. We didn't get a chance to discuss it, but you appreciated the more truncated approach to the cards, and I've got a sidebar to what you wrote about 2 weeks ago. Talk about, you know, making it a little bit easier on players and the ability, you know, to focus in on fewer races and not to be, you know, just overwhelmed with, you know, with these monster cards and you know, so much racing that you just, it all starts to look alike, and it gets more and more difficult to find betting opportunities under that scenario.
Yeah, that's a thank you, Steve. But, you know, when I was looking at the article and writing about the article, you know, I noticed that some of the, you know, some simulcast tracks had already gone to like seven race cards during the weekdays and maybe expanding a little on the weekends. And then when I saw Del Mar announce that that was their intention, you know, I really thought at first it was going to be a negative, but as we got into the meet and I was doing the work and, you know, betting the cards, I actually saw, you know, some of the positives of it. You know, one of the things is that just as a fan, a seven race card takes about 3 hours to participate in. And I can compare that to the length of watching a National Football League game, which is about 3 hours. So, you know, you don't have these interminable days of 5, 6, 7 hours, you know, following one racetrack. Sometimes, you know, we have a 12, 13, 14 race cards. You know, and as a handicapper, it really puts a focus on the races if you're a horizontal player, because, say, for example, if a track has two pick fives or two pick fours within a seven race card, well, you're going to have some key races right in the middle that overlap both bets. And if you do your homework correctly, or if you get the, you know, the right horses to put on your ticket, you actually can turn a pick five into a pick four or a pick four into a pick three. But it really helps you, I think, really laser focus on those middle races because they're so important. They're doubly important because they're in both of those horizontal bets. So, you know, there are a few things that I talked about that I thought were interesting and positive on a seven race card. And I think the way our horse inventory is around the country, we're probably going to be seeing more seven race cards and not less.
And I'll just add, and I've mentioned this in passing a couple of times, with the situation that I had to deal with, you know, starting at the end of July and for, you know, pretty much all of August with the eye, you know, where literally for those first two, almost 3 weeks, it was nightmarish trying to read and, you know, doing the close work. However, I went ahead and handicapped the Saturdays and including the immediate Saturday right after I was operated on that Tuesday night. And even during the week, you know, when I was sort of following the racing and I had the PPs in my hands, I did not do a lot of betting during the week because I just wasn't up to, you know, doing all the things I normally do, which includes, you know, Thoragraph figures and working that in and working in, you know, trainer and sire stats, particularly when it comes to the two-year-olds, doing pedigree work and, you know, then folding in the workout reports. So as a result, Rich, I pretty much played the Saturdays and a couple of Sundays. I included the Del Mar, you know, the Del Mar Pacific Classic day where I did very well. And, you know, not that, you know, not that it guarantees that, you know, that I wouldn't have had a good Saratoga because I got off to a very good start the first 3 weeks of the meet. But the races that I focused on, pretty much the pick fives each of those Saturdays, I really did very well. And it sort of said to me, you know what, not that less is more necessarily, but making a certain group of races your focus for the week and not, you know, not trying to catch every train, that there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I think so. Cause I mean, you know, when you have a diet of seven, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
One other thing I wrote in the article was there's a bet that I think we're down to Del Mar offering it, but it's the place pick all.
Yeah.
And on a seven race card, I would suggest that more tracks implement that wager because you'll get your customers to handicap all seven races ahead of time to put in a bet.
That's a good
like
idea. It's a good idea.
And then what happens is they will tend to bet more of the races individually because they've put in all the work already.
Absolutely right. Rich, that's a great point. And we'll get that spread. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter and at RaceDayLasVegas.com when they get going again at Santa Anita. And certainly as we get closer to Breeders' Cup, the selections at Brisnet and more. Rich, I appreciate it, and appreciated Steve Askin, Tony Black, Dick Powell earlier,